Okay, how's this? Woo! Sounds loud. Turn it down to 50.
50 or two? My balls!
Oh.
Come on, kids, you can do this without the F word.
Fuck right, we can!
Ooh, good stuff. Listen to that.
PYT. Hey kids, this is Rish Outfield. Who else would it be, right? This is the Rish Outcast. If you listen to this show, then chances are you listen to the Dune Steve and or That Gets My Goat. That Gets My Goat is an episode that I do more than all the other shows. Just because Big and I tend to get together every single week. You know, we miss a week here or there, but usually we're together just to hang out. I know he has to escape sometimes, you know. You get that many kids, you need an escape. I don't know. I shouldn't speak for him. But a few months ago, you probably heard a Dune Steve episode where we talked about the writers' conference that we went to in 2016. I probably told a story or two on there, but for me, that writer's conference was yesterday. For you, it was months ago. And that's kind of how the Rish Outcast works, is I have these obligations. I have stuff that I need to get out there because there's a dollar sign attached. So that's, you know, the audiobooks that I have committed to do for everybody except for the ones, the Doomrest of Terra ones, which I never get to. And that's my own fault. I think we've talked about that. In fact, I'm sure I've talked about that. You know, that's sad. That's a failing. I should never work in this town again. But after the paid gigs, I will always try and do, you know, something for somebody else. If Podcastle wants me to narrate a story, I make it a priority. Secondary priority. Second tier priority. There's the stuff that I do with a deadline and a dollar sign. And then there's the stuff I do with a deadline for other podcasts or audio dramas and that. So that's my second tier priority. And then we get the Dune Steve. The Dune Steve is important. We do so few episodes that it's rarely on the plate. We got That Gets My Goat, which there are far more episodes of. It's really easy to do. I enjoy doing it. Sometimes I put music in there. Usually I just trim here and there, cut out the times I use the Q word. And then after that, after all that is done, we've got the Rish Outcast, which is what you're hearing now. Oh, you know what? There's actually a tier below Rish Outcast, and it is the podcast that dares not speak its name, which is something where I will usually read a story written by somebody else that's in the public domain or that I've stolen. And it just sits until I feel the push of putting it out there. But here's the Rish Outcast. I seldom get them out. Although, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day and they were saying, you know, you really ought to do a Patreon account. You do a Patreon where somebody pays you a little bit of money every time you put out a short story or every time you put out a Rish Outcast with a short story in it. And yeah, if that were the case, then I think the Rish Outcast would jump up in priority. It is the easiest of all of these podcasts to do, because I'm in the car several times a week, and when I'm in the car, I listen to audiobooks, or I listen to music, or I record. Those are my three options. And It's easy. I'm going somewhere right now. I only have about 15 minutes. But then I'll have a 15-minute drive back. And so there you go. Half-hour Rish Outcast if I started recording the second I get in the car. So what I was going to talk about was yesterday, at one of the panels, Kevin Anderson. Not Kevin David Anderson, who wrote Night of the Living Trekkies and Night of the Zombies. Is it really called Night of the Zombies? Yeah, there's an audiobook I narrated where it's zombies. And it's actually a pretty fun story. I hope he sells a lot of copies. I admire Kevin Anderson's... his diligence, his showmanship. That's a good word. The guy has not put out a lot of books, as far as I know. But he constantly brings up those books. He constantly mentions it in case you don't know about it, in case you'd like to buy it, in case it's on sale. And, oh gosh, I wish I had half of that. That kind of, I don't know what the word is. Self-interest, I guess, is the impolite way of saying it. But I wish I had some self-interest so I could say, hey guys, I worked really hard on this. It's out there. I kind of need you to buy it because everybody that buys one is that much more impetus to go out and do it again. And that's not hard to say. I just, oh boy, you know I'm screwed up, right? What would be fun is if I started up a fifth podcast and it was me and a psychologist and we talk about some of my deep-seated issues. Why am I afraid of children? Do I hate women or just fear them? Do I have a sick obsession with bottoms and poopy, etc., etc.? So, crazily, it was not that Kevin Anderson. It wasn't Kevin David Anderson, but Kevin J. Anderson, who, he's written a bunch of Star Wars books, like the Jedi Academy trilogy. He wrote several books or collections of stories based on Rush songs. And he and Neil Peart, I think is the name of the drummer of Rush, are buddies. And he talked about that. And he was giving all sorts of suggestions about writing. He's had a career that's, you know, 30 years old or more. And in those 30 years or more, he's published over 100 books. And you've heard Big and Me talk about, you know, if you only wrote 15 minutes a day, this is how fast you would have a novel. And it's insane. And Kevin Anderson talked about that as well. Just, he's like, okay, you know, you only write 5 sentences a day. And he talks about, you know, the math. And he's like, there's a book. He made it sound so easy. Not easy. He made it sound so possible. And a lot of these panelists talk about that. They say, you just have to do it. You have to think about your craft as a job. Not as a hobby, not as something that I do in between bowel movements, but something that I have to do every single day. And if you will do that, A, you will get better. And B, you will you'll sell more. And Kevin Anderson talked about there's 2 ways to make popcorn. One is that you get the pan and you put in the oil and you go through the bag and you find the perfect kernel. It's the perfect, perfectly shaped kernel. You put it right there in the center of the pan. You know, you've got the heat on and eventually it pops and you take out the kernel and you eat it and yay! And then you do it again. You find the second best kernel and you put it on there and he says if you do that, you will starve to death. The other way to eat popcorn, make popcorn, is you put the oil in the pan, you open the container, and you put a ton of kernels in the pan. You turn on the heat and just eat whichever ones pop up. Pops up, that one pops, oh, that one pops. Sometimes you'll find kernels that don't ever pop. Sometimes you'll find kernels that pop and they're gross. And I'm paraphrasing, you know, he's a real writer, so he doesn't use words like gross. But that's how you do it. And he likened it to writing. At least I think he did. where he's like, okay, you can work on your perfect book, your perfect manuscript, and just polish it and make it absolutely great and depend on it. You know, it's like, this has to sell, and I'm going to get a movie deal, and I'm going to have all my dreams come true. And that's one way of doing it. But you're much more likely to be successful if you write a lot of things. You put out a lot of books, a lot of things that people can buy, a lot of things that Hollywood could option, in other words. And I think that was the comparison he was making. And so he just talked about that. You know, you write something and you get it good and you put it aside and you write the next thing. And then you get that thing that you put aside and you do a polish on it and then you move on. And Big Anklevich is a big believer in what Dean Wesley Smith says about writing. And Dean Wesley Smith is even more adamant about it than Kevin Anderson was. Yeah, Dean Wesley Smith is just like, you write it, you put it out there, you write the next thing. Now, I get the impression that Dean Wesley Smith is more of a short story writer than he is a novelist. Although, I don't know. I've done a couple of his books, and one time I spoke to him, he said, oh yeah, by the time that first book was published, I already had two more written in the series, which is astounding. But he'll tell you to do that too. Yeah, just put it out and get better and get better and get better. I think there's probably truth to that. It's hard. Well, everything is hard, guys. Getting fat is easy. Sleep tends to be easy. There are other easy things. But to actually do these things that will help you become a better author. Fuck, the whole time the microphone was down at my crotch? God, guys, I'm sorry. I discovered when I got to my destination that my microphone had fallen. Oh, I felt it happen just again. Okay, all of that is cut out. What you missed, I was explaining that my microphone, my lapel mic, fell off while I was driving, and I didn't realize it till I reached my destination. But what I cut out was, oh, just so much cursing. I was really upset. I couldn't get the lapel mic to stay on. It used to have this little clip. It was easy. You just clipped it to your shirt. You clipped it to your seatbelt. I do it on the seatbelt. The clip broke, and I guess I just thought that gravity wouldn't apply. Anyway, let me go back. The Big Anklevich is my good friend, and he is a follower of the words of Dean Wesley Smith. Dean Wesley Smith's philosophy is just keep writing. Put out the stuff that you write, then write more. You will get better just by writing more. Don't rewrite and rewrite and try and make every story as great as it could possibly be and perfect and all that stuff. Just, if you know that there's something wrong, somebody tells you that the characterization is really weak in one story, then you work on that in your next story. That's his philosophy, and he also says that once you have X number of items that people can buy, then you're going to be set, because you won't be putting all your eggs in one basket, so to speak. You'll have a lot of, I guess, what's called backlog. There was a writer, a despised writer, I've found out over the last 6 months or so, who was at the panels and really, really outspoken. California Rish admires the hell out of this guy. And he talked about your backlog is what's going to feed you. You put out a new book and sales will spike when that new book comes out. But so will your backlog. All of the books that you had previously published, they will see a spike in sales as well. And every time you have a new book, that backlog is a little bit bigger. And that, he said, is what's going to sustain you as a career. And I like that. I really like it. Dean Wesley Smith likens it to a piece of pie. Not a piece, a whole pie. And that there's all these pieces. And the beauty about publishing is that these pieces come back to you. They regenerate magically. they make you money, you know, you sell this story to a magazine. Then it comes back to you. You still have the rights. So you sell this story to an anthology and the rights come back to you. You sell this story in audio. It comes back to you. You sell this story to a foreign market. And it just, when he talks like that, I can't help but feel like, hey, I could do this. Wow, that would be really neat to see this magic pie in action. So, let's get back to Kevin Anderson, Kevin J. Anderson. He was talking about, what if you don't have that much time to write? Well, then, by golly, you make the time. And when you are not writing, when you don't have the time to write, when you're doing something else, you think about it. You think about it, and then when you do have time to sit down and write, you'll be more efficient with your time. He talks about, he said, something that I tried that worked for me was I got a recorder, a mini tape recorder, and I would go on walks for exercise, and I would take the tape recorder and I would plan out my books or my plots or the what's going to happen next or scenes or act as dialogue while I'm getting my exercise, while I'm walking around getting some fresh air. And because writers seldom are accused of getting too much fresh air. He said, I started getting better at doing that. And I got to the point where I would record the prose of the book and then I would, go back and do a polish of that, of what I had recorded vocally. And that would be my final draft my publishing draft or whatever you call the draft where you're like, okay, this is done. And he says, eventually, I got to the point where I could do the final version just out loud like that on my walk into my now digital recorder. And you know, that really spoke to me when he said that. Because A, I have a digital recorder. You know, I'm not embarrassed to tell you that right now I'm recording on the bad one. The one back in January of 2016, we asked our listeners if they wouldn't mind giving us some donations so we could buy better equipment. Because we had unusable footage. You know what I mean by footage, right? And then we'd have to go back and do it again. Or re-record or scrap things entirely. So there were enough donations. Big and I were both able to get Zooms, new Zoom recorders. And this thing that I'm recording on now is the old one, simply because the new ones haven't arrived yet. But I have a recorder, and I'm going to have a new recorder that probably going to have fewer errors because it's new. And here's another thing. You know, I'm not an exercise guy, as you know. I would rather be fat than exercise. I would rather die than exercise. But I like to ride bicycle, and I like to walk. I like to hike. I go for walks. And that's maybe not exercise for you, but that's something. And so I thought, well, I could do what Kevin Anderson said. In fact, there's a lake, and it's only, holy cow, probably 2 miles from where I live. I could walk to the lake. Of course, I won't. I could ride a bike to the, of course, I won't. But I could go to that lake. And I thought, you know what I ought to do is take the recorder, you know, snap it to my belt or something like that, and walk all the way around the lake. I'll do that tomorrow. Now, this was yesterday when Kevin Anderson said this. I'll do that tomorrow, and we'll see what happens. Maybe it'll be great. Maybe it'll just be worthless. There have been several times when I've sat down with this machine and said, okay, here's my idea for a werewolf story. Or here's my idea for the haunted bed and breakfast story. Or here's my idea for, oh gosh, what was the one? Romeo and Juliet Meet Frankenstein, I think, was the... Yeah, it sounds like I'm making that up. It's not. Yeah, that's how sad my world is I thought. And back when people were doing these pastiche things where they'd take something of literature and then they'd add the supernatural into it. I said, I can do that. And I came up with Romeo and Juliet Meet Frankenstein. And it was not inspired. But you have these two characters that kill themselves at the end of the play. And then you have Dr. Frankenstein, who is able to reanimate dead tissue. Dot, dot, dot. Anyway, there have been many times when I've sat down and I've used this recorder to just come up with an idea to just talk about something. That's better than nothing, right? There was one time I woke up, and I think it was a nightmare, but I have no memory. I have no idea if it was a nightmare or a really good dream, or a really good dream, if you know what I'm saying. But I grabbed my Zoom recorder and started recording. And in as good a detail as I could, I recounted the dream from beginning to end. And then I hit stop, and I went to sleep. I went back to sleep. And when I woke the next morning, I remembered having done that, but I didn't remember anything about the dream. Now, you and I have all had dreams where you wake up and it's so vivid and it's so real and you're, holy cow, and it's gone the next day. You're not even, well, I knew it was a bad dream and I knew there was syphilis in it. I can't remember anymore. And that it was so weird that that happened, but I have evidence. I have that dream recount and I've never listened to it, so I can't tell you if it's good or bad. But what would be neat is if I had some kind of deadline. Somebody calls me up and says, hey, we need a story for an anthology. That would never, ever happen. But it would happen to a real writer. They call him up and he says, hey, we need a story for an anthology. And I'm like, oh, shoot, I've got nothing in my head. What do I do? And I said, oh, yeah, there was that dream thing. And I pushed play, and that's what my story is, whatever it ends up being. But I really like the idea of trying that sort of thing out, the recording thing. Oh, I like it. Okay, so what was I saying a moment ago? I'm sure it was self-deprecating as hell. But you know what I would like to find someday is a model, a supermodel, who just wishes that she could meet a fat, skinny guy who just despises himself. Okay, so what was I talking about? So Kevin Anderson said that, and I thought, okay, tomorrow I've got to work. But not very long. And I think that's what I'll do, is when I get off work, I will go for... I'll drive over to the lake. Now, the lake has like a... Gosh, what would you call it? It's not like a toll booth, but it's essentially that. There's a booth. If you want to come into the parking lot and hang out at the lake, there's a place that is manned where they will ask you for money. I'm not describing this well, am I? But anyhow, what I used to always do is I would park just on the road right before you get to that booth, and then I would walk in. I usually go to that lake about once every other year. Even though, yes, it's 2 miles away from where I live. For years and years, the lake was filthy. Absolutely disgusting and full of carp. And carp are goldfish, essentially, but carp are garbage fish. They live in the bottom in the muck, and whenever they swim, they stir up the muck, and it makes... And they poo. And it makes ammonia-filled, muddy, disgusting water that... like good fish, solid fish like trout and stuff, aren't able to function in and survive in. So that was one reason why I didn't go to the lake very much. And it would smell. But there's still no excuse. I mean, I've squandered so much of my life. I really should do better. But anyhow, I said to myself, after work, go over there and let's see what you can record. Let's see what you can accomplish. And so I planned on it, and then somebody didn't show up for work, and so I had to work extra hours, which would be fine, except for that we really need that. We needed that other person at work. So it was no fun at work today. I feel bad because I got out, and it was already dark. It was night when I got out of work, but there was still so much work to do. And I felt guilty about leaving Even though, yeah, okay, I'd stayed long. I don't know. It's weird. My job is relatively easy. Compared to your job, whatever you do, my job is easy. But still, every job can be difficult in some way, or draining, or a grind, or just boring. And or it wouldn't be a job. Somebody sent me an email today and they asked about, wouldn't it be great if you could do the Doonstief professionally? That could be your job, is to do the Doonstief. And yeah, except for that, then I would probably hate it. I don't know, maybe not. I mean, it's fun to get together with Big and try and come up with something amusing to say. And it's fun to read stories. Well, those are the other things that are fun. Getting together with my friend, trying to make him laugh, and reading stories. But then you have to edit it. And you have to edit in all the voices, and you have to edit in the music, and you have to edit in the sound effects, and then you have to edit the episode itself. That's no fun. But anyway, he said, what if you had that for your job? Okay, that would be cool. Thanks, guys. Wait, what? So I didn't get to go to the lake. But I don't know. There's probably nothing stopping me from doing it tomorrow. I would like to try that. I guess I'm talking about the writers' conference. And there were all sorts of suggestions. There was a panel that I went to called Write a Novel in 3 days. Days. Actually, days shouldn't have echoed. Three should have echoed. Because holy smoke. Kids, 3 days. That panel was daunting because she talked about it, the woman giving the panel. She talked about her experience and how she did it, and that she wrote X number, some unbelievable number of books in 2015, and in 2016 she was going to write 15 books. And there were people that would stand up at the beginning of the panel and they would say, hi, my name is Joe Donovan. I started writing in 2011. I've got 16 books in print and my wiener is 8 inches long. And I would just be like, how? How is that possible? But they would talk about things, and whenever they said, you know, this is what I do, or this is what you should try, I would say to myself, I can try that. Maybe I'll try that. The woman giving the panel of the 3-day novel talked about how much work it was and talked about, you know, that you give yourself little breaks to defecate, little breaks to urinate, little break to take a sleep. Take a sleep? Yes, take a sleep, kids. And that you're not supposed to have any outside contact. You're not supposed to call your family. You're certainly not supposed to have Facebook or any of that happy crappy. And she says, you will be miserable by the last day. You'll be so excited to get out of there. And if you worked hard, like you were supposed to on the first 2 days, the third day, you will be able to finish. But the third day will be the hardest. She talked about, you know, it's not easy to do this, and it's not pleasant, and it's not fun, but that everybody should do it. And that she does it a couple of times, not a couple, several times a year. And it also makes her regular writing schedule feel like a break. Feel like, oh, hey, I can do this. This is a vacation. And at the end of her panel, she says, show of hands, how many of you think you'll try this 3-day novel writing thing? And yeah, some hands came up. That was great, including like couple of 12-year-olds that were in the audience. Oh, as if I didn't hate tweens enough. But I didn't raise my hand. There are things that I will try. And Big and I will probably talk about this in that gets my go. There are things that I will try, and then there are things that it's just like, I don't think I will do that. And she said, you know, she just would go and get a hotel room for 3 days, and she never talked about what she ate during those 3 days. Did she make sandwiches? Did she order a pizza? Is there room service at this hotel room she's staying in? If so, Does she make enough money from her three-day novels that she can order room service? I certainly don't. I'll bet ordering room service once would eat up all the money I made in 2015 from my writing. Am I digressing? No, I'm not. But my dad does have a cabin. He has a cabin in the woods. And it has a lake by it that is a little better. I mean, you still don't swim in it because it's cold, because the lake is mostly snow, winter snow that has melted and gone into this lake. And the cabin is really, really nice. I think it's great. I'm not a survivalist or any of that stuff. The cabin has electricity. It has a wood-burning fireplace. It has windows, doors. It has a generator, blankets. It has no television. And it's remote enough that there's one radio station that can be picked up, and no internet, no cell phone service. And so let's say that I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take 3 days and I'm going to go up to the cabin and I am going to write. I'm going to do a novel in 3 days. I don't know. I think I could do that, except for, you know me, I have this effed up imagination. And I would be afraid. After 2 days alone in a cabin, I would become Jack Torrance. And so that's scary. But I could try it. I told Big, well, I think I could write down the ideas for 3 short stories and say, I'm going to go to the cabin and write those 3 short stories in the same way that, you know, she writes a whole novel in the 3 days. I'm writing 3 short stories in 3 days is laudable. It's something I've never done. Part of me wonders if I could do it. But if you're doing what she suggested in that panel, then yeah, I could do that. There's the last thing I'm going to talk about was somebody said, oh, you know, you should try Ride or Die. And I had tried it. I'm trying to remember when I tried it. I tried it a couple years ago, or maybe it was longer. Here's another thing. When you get old, you will find that time starts to fly by. I don't know how long we've been doing the Doonstief Audio Fiction Magazine, but it's so much longer than it feels like we've been doing it. I tried Ride or Die once, and I didn't enjoy it. But I said, like I said just, you know, a few minutes ago, I can try that when somebody says, you know, you should try Ride or Die. So what I did was I got on Ride or Die last night after this writer's conference, and I was tired. But I said, okay, I'm going to put in 500 words. Ride or Die basically is this program where you tell it how many words you're going to type and how much time you have to write it in. It gives you a box, and when you push start, you have to write those words in that the allotted time, or you are raped. No, sorry. Or what happens is something... What happened to me last night, and I know that there are different settings and different things work for different people, but I just put it on, you know, like default. And what happened to me is if you pause, and I don't know how long the pause is, but my guess is 5 seconds. Could be 10, but my guess is 5. The screen goes from white to red, and you can tell it what color you want it to go to. But it went to red. And yes, my guess is 5 seconds the screen goes to red, 10 seconds this unbelievably horrible sound. Okay, everybody take a step back. I sound a little bit like plays to punish you, to scare you, to make you soil yourself. At least that's what it did for me. And I guess it's just a way of motivating yourself, of making you do it, which is admirable, which is it's good. I didn't enjoy the experience, but okay. So I was going to write 500 words in 5 minutes, and I pushed start, and I went, and I think there was one moment when the screen went red, and I was like, oh, because I was trying to think of a word, you know? It was like, just like a minute ago, I said, it's admirable, the program. But I wanted to say it's laudable. And then I remembered, oh, I already said laudable in this podcast. What's another word that sounds like, that feels like laudable? And just doing something like that is enough to make Ride or Die punish you or threaten to punish you. And so there was one moment that went red and I finished, and I finished my 500 words, and there was still, I don't know, 30 seconds left on the timer. And so I said, okay, well, I'm just going to type until the timer runs out. So I did. And then I said, okay, I'm going to do it again, but this time I'm going to do it in 4 minutes, just for fun. So I put 500 words, 4 minutes, and I pushed start, and there was a character name, and I couldn't remember the character name. And so I said, oh, shoot, what was the character? Oh, gosh. And normally, I would go back up in the document, and I would find that character's name, and then I would go down to the bottom and be like, oh, it was Anton Moss. But in this case, I couldn't do that. And so I was like, oh, shoot. Okay, I know it started with what letter did it start with? And so the screen went to red, and then I was like, okay, no, it's on the tip of my tongue. Oh, I think it's, and then it went, which startled me a little bit. I mean, I knew it was coming because the screen had gone red. But more than startling me, it just angered me. I'd be like, shut up. No, I'm writing here. You know what I mean? It was one of those where it's like, I've got 312 words and now you're punishing me? But I did manage the 500 words before the timer ran out on the 4 minutes. So I think it ended up with like 1,100 words in 10 minutes. And I mentioned that to Big, and he's like, holy cow, dude, that's awesome. And I was like, what do you mean? Awesome that somebody would do that to me, the meanness? And he's like, no, that's a lot of words. You did good. I was like, oh, well, I did, didn't I? And yeah, I said to him, well, hey, just don't do Ride or Die. I mean, unless you are okay with having white hair by the time you're finished. But just talking to you about it, suddenly I'm like, I think I should do that again. I think I should do 1,000 words and see if I can do it in 10 minutes or 9 minutes and just hit the, you know, do the, so double the workload in the same amount of time and see how that goes. And shoot, that's so crazy. I want to just stop this recording and run over and do that. I guess I'll call this episode, I Can Do That. I Can Be a Better Writer. There was one writer on the panel, I think the very first panel I went to, that says he gets up at 5:30 every single morning, so he can write. Because he has to go to work in the morning, and his work is such that he's not only physically exhausted when he comes home, but he's emotionally spent. He's emotionally exhausted from working in corporate America in the 21st century. And the last thing he wants to do is write. Plus, as everybody but me can attest, he has a buttload of kids. I mean, so many kids, and they're all clamoring for his attention and breaking things and yelling. And something that kids do that I don't know that I could ever get used to is when they go, Mom! 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 A kid would lose a tooth every time he did that if I were his mom. Which seems mean, I guess, to you who has a shload of kids. But you chose to have the shload of kids. So I guess you have the onus on your back of not being able to beat them. But I do. I can beat them. I can beat them with impunity. When you find out someone has been beating your children, you know it was me. But I have diplomatic immunity. So I can beat them if I want to. So the guy gets up at 5:30 every single morning and writes, because that's the only peace that he has. And the only time when his head is not filled to the brim with worries and stress and paperwork and obligations and nagging spouse and all that stuff. When he said that, when he said, I get up at 5:30 in the morning every single day, I did not say, I can do that. But I've written 7 days in the last 7 days. It's not a record for me, but that's pretty good. It's both laudable and admirable. And if I write tomorrow, you know, and the day after that and the day after that, that's 10 days in a row. I can do that. You guys can too. You know, even if it's something as small as just 500 words in Write or Die, I'm typing it in, 500 words, I'm going to do it, or I get to hear that horrible, horrible sound. It's a little bit like if Alanis Morissette and the lead singer of Rush had a baby together. And so I think you can do it. And I encourage you to try it. To just try and write today and tomorrow and the next day. If you want to write. If you don't want to write, there's other things you want to do. I want to exercise. I want to lose some weight, so I'm going to exercise today and tomorrow and the next day. Just see if I can do 3 days in a row. You can do that. I'm not going to kill any homeless people for 3 days. Today, the next day, the day after that, no homeless people will die. Maybe the day after that, they should be afraid. But these are things you can do. I try it. You can try it. This has been Rish Outfield. I don't imagine you got much out of this episode. But I did. I enjoyed it. And I've only been sitting in the car for 10 minutes, just letting the engine run and not getting out. What's 10 minutes, guys? You can do it too. Goodbye.
For your information, the podcast you have just suffered through was produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. That little bit of knowledge just might save your life one day.
But I really like the idea of trying that sort of thing out. The recording thing. Oh, I like it. Very first time I ever got drunk, I recorded the experience. Because it was just like, wow, what's this? Record. And I described what it felt like. And I to me, it was so novel. I had never had that experience before. That I was just like, oh, I've got to save this for posterity. And that one, I did go back and listen to. And the thing that's crazy is I had no idea what I was saying. The sober me was not able to understand what drunk me was saying. And that was so strange because it was like it was a different person. You know, if ever you're going to understand somebody, it's yourself. But I couldn't understand drunk me. Oh boy, this is a bad episode, guys. I am so sorry. Let me hit stop just for a minute and then kill myself.
Try.
Oh, this is a good song. You guys like this song? Okay, just listen to me. This will be an outtake, guys. You don't have to listen to this song. This is the end of the episode. You can turn it off, but if you want to sing Little Red Corvette... Oh, baby, you're much too fast. A little red Corvette. You need to find a love that's going to last. Ooh, baby, you're much too... Got to slow down. Okay, I'm going to cut that out completely. Nobody wants that as an outtake. Holy shit. Little red Corvette, baby, you gotta slow down. Chalupa is my name, and that's what I say. Okay. Oh, I never want to hear that song again.